Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Ladies and gentlemen, today I'm super excited. I have with me Kathy Heller. She is a singer and a host of the Don't Keep Your Day Job podcast. And I just found out she made $1 million in the first year of launching her online course. Kathy, say hello.
You're so cute. Hi, Tom. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
We can just continue the discussion. We were talking a little bit about Kathy's online course, and that I create online courses through a different service. And you're about to just tell me a little bit about like what went into launching it and making that $1 million happen, because you know most online courses don't sell.
Is that true?
It is true. It is true. There's a difference, though. I mean, you're an expert in a certain field. I do find that a lot of the people creating courses are not experts, so they want to become experts through creating the course, right?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then some of the authors, they feel that the course will sell itself, so they simply leave it alone.
That's interesting. So here's my take on it is this. I feel like you don't need to be an expert. You don't need to like have written a book on it. You don't need to have a PhD in it. I just think that you need to be honest about, have you gotten some results in the thing that you're teaching, right? Like you want to make sure that you've gotten this result, and hopefully you've gotten the result for somebody other than yourself, right? Like let's say you want to teach a class on professional organizing, like how to organize and get rid of your clutter. So hopefully you're amazing at that, right? Maybe that's something that you've been told many times, like, oh, you're so good at that. Like, wow, you know, and then maybe it's the kind of thing where you've already helped like your sister and your neighbor and your best friend, and you've seen it really give people those results. And so if that's the case, I do feel like if you have enough enthusiasm and you're willing to show up and be consistent, you could then help other people get those same results. I feel like it's a matter of being willing to be uncomfortable and put yourself out there. And you do have to own that. You have to like take a stick and put it in the sand and say, I have gotten results. I have gotten results for other people. I'm passionate about what I can do for you because I've seen it already done. Once that's going on, I feel like the thing that sometimes people miss, and this has to do with courses as well as every other business under the sun, people sometimes put stuff out before they've validated their idea, before they've gotten the feedback that what it is that they're teaching is in fact what people need to learn. And this has to do with every business. Like even if you were going to start a cupcake business, or you were going to start a yoga certification program, or you were going to do any number of things, you want to make sure first that whatever you're creating is congruent with what the people are wanting, and you're solving problems and you're adding value and you're brightening up people's days. So what that means is give yourself a little break. You don't need to know that intuitively necessarily, but do the work, do the homework to sort of figure it out. So before I ever started an online class, and by the way, I'm launching a new class in a few weeks that's related to my podcast, which is called Don't Keep Your Day Job. And I'm starting a course on helping people to figure out how to take their hobby and turn that into a full-fledged career. But my last class that I started was on how to help people write music for film and TV successfully, because I had been doing that for about 10 years. I had been writing music for TV shows and ads like McDonald's and Hasbro and Walmart and you name it, KFC and Keurig Coffee, and the list just goes on, and T-Mobile and Petco, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So I was making multi six figures a year, $300,000 a year, let's say, as a songwriter for many years, which is really competitive. And it took me a while, and believe me, I am not any more talented than like so many other people I know who don't have those sort of accolades. It was just that I was very resourceful and I was very determined and I was unwilling to sort of like be unfulfilled. And so I made it my mission to figure out how to reverse engineer, how to hone my craft. And we can talk about that later. But when I started an online class, I had already done three things before that, which is A, I had gotten those results for myself. B, I had already sat down sort of organically with people one-on-one who had asked me, how did you get your song on that TV show? How'd you get your song in the trailer for that movie? How'd you get your song in that ad? And I had sort of already been asked that so many times, and I had coffee with this person, I had lunch with this other person, I was giving this person sort of the lowdown. And then I would get emails from people saying, oh, you know, that worked. I reached out the way you told me to that particular person, and I figured out how to solve their problem and what song they might need. And I went back and I finessed something in the studio, and then the song felt like it was more right for this person. And I reached out, and guess what? It happened. I thought, awesome. You know, what I'm telling people is working. And then I thought maybe I should start a class. And so I started locally first, where I would gather together whoever was in my like area who might be interested in knowing how to write music for film and TV. And this would apply to whatever class you're teaching. If you want to teach a class on how to make the best sourdough bread, if you want to teach a class on, you know, how to be a better parent, whatever you want to teach, find people locally first, like in the three-dimensional world, who might want to come to your house. And first of all, you could make it free because you're going to be gaining data from them, right? Like you can just like try stuff out and come up with what you think is a good curriculum and see like if anything's missing or if you need to break something down further. And so I started by having three workshops in my house, and there was about 12 songwriters that came. And they paid a small fee just to be like showing up, because I feel like when people pay at least something, it makes them more responsible. Like they get more out of it because they keep themselves more accountable. So people came to the workshop. I gained some data, like what did they like? What did they want more of? What wasn't working? And then I went from there and I taught a bigger workshop. I rented a theater in town. It cost me like $200, and I had this whole theater for 4 hours, and I was able to, you know, sell the seats. And so I had 50 people come, and I did 7 or 8 months of those where I did like many, I don't know, 16 or 20 of those in this theater. And then once that was sort of really dialed in, I thought, okay, maybe now I could take this online and figure out how to make this into slideshows and figure out what kind of extra support my students would need. Like maybe they would need a Facebook group where I would come on and check in with them once a week, or do office hours, or maybe they would also need worksheets, or maybe they would also need like accountability. So they need to have like a Facebook group for not just to see me, but to see each other so they can check in with each other and keep each other sort of focused. And I'm happy to say that, yeah, when I started that online class, within the first year, I did three launches. So like every few months, I would open it up again for enrollment. And each time we opened it up for enrollment, we had about 240 people who would join, and it was great. So we were able to, the class is $1,000, either upfront, or it's, you know, you pay $100 a month for 12 months. So that's $1,200. So if you do the math, you look at it, you take 900 people and you times that by 1200, then yeah, we made a little over $1 million. And then, we really help people, which is the best part. We had a lot of people who had said, you know, I took this class and oh my gosh, I just got my song in a Starbucks ad and I made $55,000. We had somebody else who was like, oh my gosh, I'd never had a placement before, and I just got a Coors Light commercial and I made $180,000. And it was amazing. And we had like about 38 students who got their first ever song ever placed in a TV show or an ad. And so much of it has to do with what you put into any class, you know, so the students really have to show up and do the work. Like I can give you a great recipe for like the best croissants in the world, but if you're not really practicing how to like make that dough as fluffy as possible, just because I give you the ingredients doesn't mean you're going to get it right. So it has a lot to do with what the students do with the information and how they apply it. But it's been an amazing journey. It sort of led me to my podcast, actually, because one of my students said, you're so inspiring. You should start a podcast for all creative people, not just for songwriters. And I thought, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that. And so I started a podcast about a year and a half ago, and now I'm starting my next course, which is really designed to help anybody with a creative idea and a passion project turn that into a career.
Yeah, I think a part of it, too, is that you actually were an expert at something. You know, I'm from the music industry as well, and you'll probably appreciate this. I put your music on yesterday, and in the beginning,
you're so sweet that you did that.
In the beginning, I'm thinking, okay, this sounds a little bit like an ad. It maybe it was an ad, but you know, and then I said, it's not very unique, and you know, kind of went to do something else. But then about 20 minutes later, I realized, hold on, I'm still listening to it. This is super polished. Like, there's something here, right? So even though, like you said, you're maybe not the most talented, but I mean, you can see the hours of practice that went into it. And all this stuff, like, the first thing I thought, I was like, wow, like, this could easily go, like, maybe it won't hit the music industry as hard, but this would definitely sell as anything, as an advertisement or to any company or maybe a podcast. Or, I mean, the places where you actually make money with songwriting, like, this is the type of music that would sell.
Well, the good news is for everybody who's listening is, like, everybody has a place. I do believe there is a place for everybody. I believe that people are really hard on themselves. I believe that there's so much good stuff in the world, and most of it never sees the light of day because people just overthink themselves to death. But when I came out to Los Angeles when I was 24, I tried to get a record deal, and I really worked hard, and I was going to my day job and working just so I could pay for my rent. And I didn't have a famous last name or a trust fund or anything. I was just a normal 24-year-old trying to aspire to do what I wanted to do. And I was like working towards getting a record deal, which was the only way I had ever known to make a living as a songwriter. And in a lot of the world, we're only aware of a certain, you know, few jobs. And so you think to yourself, okay, if I want to be a painter, well, unless I have my paintings at the Museum of you know, in the big museums in New York, how do I ever make a living? Like, there's only a few things modeled, you know, you could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer. So in my world, I thought the only way to make a living as a songwriter was to get a record deal. And so I worked really hard to write songs and try to meet people to write songs with and try to keep leveling up my songwriting. And I finally did actually get a record deal with Interscope. And it was really surreal and it was cool. And about, you know, a few months later into the contract, they said, you know, we're not going to keep this. We're going to drop you from the label because we're not really crystal clear that we can sell it. We're not sure that the songs would be on the radio. And so I thought, oh, that's so frustrating because I worked so hard, you know, to even get there. And it was like meeting the Wizard of Oz and then finding out he's not going to be able to get you home. So I thought, well, how else in the world am I ever going to make a career as a writer, a songwriter? Because that's all I knew that I really wanted to do with my life. And it feels really scary when the one thing that feels like you, you're told might never happen. You're like, well, then what's my identity? What's my destiny? How am I going to become what I want to be in this world? And so I was really depressed and I thought about getting a quote unquote real job. And so I took jobs, like other jobs, like that were sort of not day jobby jobs, but jobs that I thought would be like a career. So I got a real estate license and I tried that and I put on a pantsuit and tried to think that I was like fooling myself into something, you know, else. And I took a class in interior design and I thought about doing that. And I worked for a nonprofit and I got a yoga teacher training, you know, certificate under my belt. And I thought like about all these other careers. And 2.5, 3 years later, I was just like, why do I just feel like someone like clipped my wings? Like I just felt really sad. It was hard for me to date because I didn't feel like myself. It was hard for me to wake up in the morning, I'd have to like, you know, force myself to go to these jobs and like keep telling myself all day long that this was actually fine. And my parents were never really happy. My parents got divorced and my mom always struggled with depression. My dad always struggled with anxiety and they were so unfulfilled. And like, it was like very tense growing up in my house. And so I thought, I really don't want to do that again, where I just like settle for something that doesn't feel like me. I'm not that happy. You know, I was like, I could convince myself that like teaching yoga or whatever is amazing because it is, but I still didn't feel like myself. So I was like, I got to figure something else out. And so I just kept trying to like figure out what else I could do. And then one day I had this like amazing turn of fate where I really do feel like what you seek is seeking you. And I was reading Billboard magazine and I read an article about a girl who was licensing her songs to TV shows. And her name was Ingrid Michaelson. She was getting her songs on ads like Old Navy and she was having her songs in Grey's Anatomy. And I started like to go down the rabbit hole and I started researching all these other artists who at the time in 2007, 2008, were having their songs on different ads and Target commercials and Apple commercials and also on all these shows at the time like One Tree Hill and all these other ABC shows and ABC family shows. And I thought, wow, that's never something that was ever modeled for me. But if I had the ability to get the attention of a record deal, even though I got dropped, I must have some talent. There must be something about my vocal quality or my writing ability that is good. And I've been told my whole life that there's something that happens when I sing and people seem to like it. And there must be a way for me to apply myself to this other path. I had never seen it before. And so I thought, well, what would I have to do? So I started to like reverse engineer, you know, okay, well, I have to figure out what kind of songs to send. I have to figure out who to send them to. Who even is the person who's buying these songs? Who's the person who's quote unquote choosing these songs? And I found out that that person is called a music supervisor. So I started to research who those people were, and I started to know them like a baseball fan would know which baseball players were on which teams. I started looking into like, oh, if you asked me, you know, who was the music supervisor, like even today, if you asked me like, who's the music supervisor for the show This Is Us, I'm going to tell you who it is. It's Jen Pykin. If you ask me who's the music supervisor for Scandal, I'm going to tell you who it is. It's Alexandra Patsavas and Casey Truman and Brittany White. Like, I became such a student of that. And then I started to figure out how would I, you know, sort of stand out from the noise and get their attention and be able to get my songs heard. And you know what? I just worked really hard to figure out what they need and to figure out how to make something that authentically me, that's also what they need. And, you know, it took like many different songs. Like Ed Sheeran, he's a great songwriter. And he says, if you go to a log cabin where you're staying for a weekend in the winter and you go to turn on the water and you haven't been in the cabin for like 3 or 4 months, the water runs like brown, sludgy, dirty, and you have to let the water run. And about 40 seconds later, the water is clearer and clearer. And now it's fine. You can drink it. You can take a shower in it. So he said that's the same thing with any creativity. It's like you have to be willing to let the water run out. And that those first few things that you make, if you're a pottery maker, those first few pots, if you're writing music, the first 7 songs, if you're creating a course, the first 3 courses, like, or not maybe the first 3 courses, but the first 3 attempts at maybe figuring out your Facebook ad strategy or figuring out, you know, how you're going to express this. Everything takes time. And I think that the only thing that you need to be successful is the grit to stay in it. And when you have that determination and you have such a strong why about why you're determined to keep going, you don't have to be an expert out the gate. You just have to be the person who's unrelenting and unwilling to give up. And I do think that you need to be willing to align yourself with what really is right for you. Like, if I would have kept trying to get the record deal, I think I would have kept losing, because I really don't think that with all the persistence in the world, that was really my destiny. I don't think that's the kind of music that is for me. I don't think that selling out stadiums and touring the world and doing a Super Bowl halftime show is in the cards for me. But I do think that I was willing to listen and take the feedback. And instead of getting rejected and just walking away completely, I came back to the table and said, well, how can I understand that there must be something good here, but maybe the thing that's better for me is to try it this way. And then I had a lot of success pretty easily because I aligned with what was better for me. So I think that, you know, as you go through life, we have to be sort of like unrelenting in how to get to what is the best way to express our potential and how is it that our stuff, our unique gifts, our best sort of used and to serve the world. And we have to be flexible at how that might look, because I know some actors living in LA, I know a lot of actors, and some of those people are like trying and trying and trying and trying, and they might not be getting it. But if the world keeps saying no, maybe they're actually a better writer. Maybe they're actually a better director. And maybe if they had the humility to step back and drop it, they could then pursue what's really, you know, where their strengths lie. So I think we need to have some self-awareness and we need to take a hard look at that.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on that. Just from my experience in the music industry, I think getting dropped was probably one of the best things that could have happened to you.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, you know, you mentioned the finding yourself moment and being depressed. And I think a lot of us that move from the script, right? Like the script that the world wrote for us, to just choosing ourselves, we all go through that confusion and depression. You know, it's, I think it's
totally
very normal, because I can remember it with myself too. And this rejection thing, you know, this is one of the reasons I am not a fan of the shows like American Idol or The Voice. You know, they're entertaining.
Right, I know. No, it's humiliating to people.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, people put too much power into the hands of the judges, right? Just because they didn't like you doesn't mean anything, you know? You know, I've worked with some of the people that I see judging people on The Voice, and they're great people. But, you know, if they told me no, I wouldn't give a shit. I'd be like, yeah, it's okay. You know, just you do your thing. Let me do my thing. You know, and I think it's kind of counterproductive. You know, being a part of those shows, it can destroy you without, like, you didn't need to do that.
Mm-hmm. True.
So when it comes to your course, and I can imagine your podcast is growing a lot because, you know, you're super engaging. You know, I'm even getting my day brightened, right? So.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thanks.
What does your funnel look like to sell these courses? Is it straight from the podcast? Because I did notice you do have advertisers on that too.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you funnel people through from the beginning to actually buying the course?
Well, I haven't actually launched the course yet for the podcast. That's going to come out in about a month or so. So I'll let you know.
About the other one, the one you've launched before? How have you sold 1 million of that?
So that was before I ever had a podcast.
Okay.
And the way that works, at least in my experience, because I can only speak from my own experience, what worked for me. So when launching that course, what I decided to do is I decided to put out as much free value as I could before launching it. And I had in mind that if I wanted to launch it in, let's say, August, that starting in June, I was going to start just putting out as much free content as possible with the hopes that whoever was enjoying the free content, maybe a portion of those people would then convert to want to be inside the class. So I was actually pregnant with my third daughter, and she's 18 months now. And I was pregnant with her, and I thought, you know, she's going to be born sometime in September. So I have this summer, and I have two other kids, right? I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they were like 2.5 and I guess 4.5 at the time or whatever. And I thought, I'm going to wake up early because it's the summer and they're both home, and I'm going to like just be so determined to crank out this class. And if I want to launch it before the baby's born, I better start really figuring out how to get some like amazing, valuable content out in the world for free. And so I started to sit down and ask myself, if I was a songwriter, if I was the kind of person who wanted to eventually take the class, what are the nuggets of wisdom that I really would need? And so I started to write down like blogs where I would say, you know, here are like the 7 most important ingredients to getting your song in film and TV, or here are the 7 myths. Like, you don't need to be famous. You don't need to have 400,000 Facebook followers. Like, you can get your song on TV without any of that. You don't need to pay a publisher 50%. You can do it on your own, isn't it? Like, I just, whatever information I thought was helpful. And so I would create blog posts, and I created a Facebook group where I was there to answer questions for songwriters. And then I started putting out all this content, and I would create Facebook ads that I would sort of funnel the blog post to. And I would say, you know, if you're a songwriter and you want to license your music, opt in, get this cheat sheet, get this checklist. I think it'll be really helpful. And so people started to click on it. And then I decided to do a few free webinars. And so on the webinars, as you can tell from the way I'm talking today, I really, really freaking care about people. So I put like my all into those webinars, and I didn't do this like bait and switch thing where I gave you like one interesting idea and then said, okay, if you want everything else, you have to come to the class. I just basically gave like my entire heart and soul, and I answered every question, and I spent about 2 hours on every webinar. And the first webinar had just over 1,000 people on it, and it was the first webinar I'd ever done. And I think that part of that was the beauty of Facebook ads, because when you're targeting something that's very specific and you know who your audience is, like, I knew that I wanted the Facebook ads to show up on the feeds of people who had already self-identified as a songwriter and who had already gone to other songwriting events that were specifically targeted for people who wanted to write for film and TV. Like, there's a lot of events that people had already put on their Facebook page that they had gone to or they liked that were film and TV songwriting events. So it's very helpful because it's specific. It's not like saying, I want this Facebook ad to reach all the moms out there or, you know, whoever likes to be vegan. It was more specific. So I had 1,000 people at the webinar, and at the end of the webinar, I said, I'm launching a class, and here's the link to the Teachable site. I used a website called Teachable to make it. And 140 people signed up at the end of the webinar from 1,000. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. I just made $140,000. And then the cart to the class, the enrollment, it was open for 3 weeks. And so by the end of the 3 weeks, there was another like 100 people who joined. And so I thought, let's rock and roll. And I showed up and gave those people my all. And then a few months later, we opened the class again for enrollment, and we did like a challenge to get people excited and songwriting and thinking about writing for TV. And at the end of that challenge, I said, you know, you can join the class, and people joined it. And then I had an idea to create the next level of a class. And so I then created a class for people who had joined the first one who might want something more. And so I created a program called the Access Program, which was all of the nuts and bolts and great wisdom that you'd learn about how to write music for film and TV and the Facebook community, the private Facebook community. But in addition, I decided, what if I brought on through Zoom video calls every single month consistently the music supervisors themselves who are choosing music at all these different places, NBC, different ad agencies. And so I created this program called the Access Program, where people had the ability to not just learn the information, but now to actually ask questions directly to the people who are the gatekeepers. And people love that class. That class is going so well. And it literally is a, like, it's an entry point to the people that people need to meet, like the person choosing music for every show, like every big ad. Like, we literally, that's what we're doing. In addition to all of that, I started a music licensing agency about 4.5 years ago, before I started teaching classes, where I help other artists to get their songs on TV and film. And I have a couple great people who work with me full time to help run the agency. And we represent about 40 artists. So in addition, in this new Access course, I also give people assignments, and I have the ability to pitch their songs for the things that we work on every day in our agency. When we actually get a request from somebody at an ad agency or at a TV show or at a trailer company. And so we've been adding that now to this new program, and we pitch people's music, and we've gotten a few people licenses. We just got somebody $75,000 for a Chico's ad. We just got somebody a McDonald's spot. We just got somebody else a spot that's running in Chile for another brand. So, and we got a few people some TV stuff, which has been really fun.
That's super impressive. It seems like the prep work that you made initially with all the research paid off.
Yes, the research.
The research. Yes. It really does seem like you do much more research than the average online marketing, almost anyone, right? So I give you props on that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It also seems like you created a really good ecosystem with all these products and all the things that you're kind of touching in that space. So why did you move away from that to that don't keep your day job? Because it seems like you could probably lock in that ecosystem even more.
That's a good question. You know, so I started writing music because I wanted to make people feel better. You know, one of the reasons that I used to write these songs that I think wound up finding a home in TV shows and ads is because my songs that I wrote for the label, even like when I started writing music at 4 and 12 and 18 and 23, and when I was writing songs to get signed to a label, all of my music is very like anthemic. It's all about knowing that you're enough and overcoming something and knowing that somebody else is really there for you and in your corner. And so all the songs are a little bit like on a positive note. And so I think that's why songs that I've written have been featured in McDonald's and Walmart, because they have this sort of very like, there's an uplifting quality to it. And so as a songwriter, my goal was never to help people be songwriters. My goal was to stand up in front of an audience and help people feel better, to help people feel like they matter, like they could just take a moment in this concert and just get away from some of the pain and just feel uplifted. That was the role that I played growing up in my house. My parents were always very unhappy, and there was so much pain and discomfort, and my parents eventually split up, and I was really there to try to help my mom get through that really awful time. And so I've always played this role of being there to like cheer people up. And I actually sometimes really, it's hard because I feel overwhelmed by it sometimes, but a lot of times I really like it. I feel like it's my natural, you know, it's one of the reasons I was put in the world. So when I started to have a lot of success as a songwriter licensing my music, I was like, well, that's cool, because my song was on this McDonald's ad, and then other people went and they found it on iTunes, and now people are feeling good from hearing these songs in their car. That's the point. And then I started an agency, and I started helping other artists to get their songs licensed, and I thought, well, that's cool, because I want to help other people. And then I started a songwriting class where I was able to help people to get their music placed, which is great. But my ultimate desire was never to be known as the girl who's like great at licensing music or great at teaching people how to make a living from licensing songs or how to write songs and strip them down and understand what makes a great song for a great ad. My goal has always been to help people to feel seen and valued. I feel like there's so many people who walk around just feeling like they've been forgotten, like no one really cares, like if they got hit by a truck. Like there's so many people who are feeling so insignificant, and I want to like shake those people and be like, you matter so much. You're so important. Like, and you have so much to contribute. And I think that after spending all those years with my mom growing up and seeing her being so sad, I think that the opposite of depression is purpose. I think people want to feel a sense of purpose. And so in my songwriting class, I think that people can tell that I really care about sort of a holistic approach to how they're going to like better their lives. And so much of what I was teaching them had, you know, 15% of it had to do with like music, but 85% of it was about them really getting out of their own way. And so when somebody suggested, one of my students, she said, why don't you have a podcast that speaks to every human being, not just songwriters? I thought, you know what, maybe that's the thing I really always wanted to do, but I just never saw that before I never saw that road before. I just started with, oh, I love songwriting. It's what makes me feel better. I go to music to heal, so I'm going to write music. But really, now that I sit down every day and I interview people on my show and I talk to people who are listeners of my show, I feel like in many ways it really suits me because it gives me so much purpose to know that this show encourages people, gets people through their day, lets them know that they, you know, like, I'll just end by saying, at least I'll end this question by saying, I said on my podcast this week, I said, and I don't script anything. I don't prepare. I'm really curious. So when I have a guest on, I just am really curious about them. That's why I booked them. So I just have a normal conversation. And with any of the things that I say in an intro, I don't script it. I just speak from the heart. So this week something came over me and I said, I just want you guys to know, if you're listening to my podcast, that you're not broken. You don't need fixing. I'm not doing a podcast to educate you because I have answers and you don't. I'm doing a podcast to let you know how freaking brilliant you are and to get you out of your own way and give you some tough love to like get that stuff, whatever that brilliance is. If you like to cook, if you like to bake, if you like to sew, if you like to knit, if you like to dance, if you want to write a screenplay, get it out, you know? And then in addition to the empowering stuff, I really do feel, having run 3 successful businesses, I do feel like there are some practical, like hard tools that I can give people. And so that's what the show is about. But I think that's why I enjoy having this part of my life. And I still have the music stuff running and it's been great. And we just had like our best quarter in our music licensing business, which is so much fun. The fact that like I just wrote a theme song myself for a Netflix show makes me feel like amazing. Like I can do the music thing still, which is like really it's like a passion project. But really, it feels like most of my time now is being spent on just really helping other people, which feels just more fulfilling to have that be like the center.
Yeah, I think the part of that broken feeling is just the way America is. I get drawn more to places like Thailand or Spain or Portugal. People just seem calmer. Even Berlin just seem much calmer, much happier on the outside. I think there's something about what's happening here with big companies just trying to figure us out and show us ways in which we're broken to sell us things, to fix that, you know? When I come back here, some of the bigger cities, maybe not as much, but the middle of America, like people do seem like they just want to get from the day to day, right? They just want to kind of get through it and maybe wake up tomorrow. They really don't care much. But I don't think it's their fault. I really think it's the way the script's been written. And I think we do need people like you. And I don't mean just motivational, right? Because, you know, you can't really be motivated externally too long. At some point, you have to have something that spark or just something
right.
you went through.
Yeah,
but I do think maybe you can ignite some of these ideas, right? Like sometimes you plant a seed in someone's head and then 4 years from now, they'll just be like, you know what? I got it now.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is instead of staying in your head, you've got to do stuff. Like people, they think and overthink. And then, of course, they don't really have that great idea yet because it might not even be your right idea. You know, like a lot of people I know who are really successful, they tried many different things until they finally landed on the thing. Like, let's say you think your thing is that you're going to make like the best vegan food in the world. And so you finally stop thinking about it and you try it and you decide that you're going to have like 8 friends over for dinner. You're going to try out all these recipes and you're going to see if there really is something to it. And maybe if enough people like it, you're going to go ahead and buy a food truck and have like this vegan food truck. So you have 8 people over for dinner and they sit down and they start to like taste the things that you're making. And no one's really enthusiastic about it. Like people are like trying to be nice to you. So they're like, oh, thanks. It's good. But you can tell they're not like overjoyed. But then 2 different people at different parts of the evening compliment you on the way you set the table and on these like flowers. And you say, oh, well, thanks. But what about the food? And then they're like, yeah, it was good. And then somebody else says, so where'd you get this flower arrangement? And you say, oh, I have a garden in the back. And so I cut some flowers and put some raw twine around this vase. And I just put together this table. And people keep saying how much they love the way you set up the table and the flowers and whatever. So maybe by trying that vegan thing, you realize that you are definitely the best vegan cook on the block. Like nobody at the table said that they could make any of those 8 dishes. And it was really amazing how you made your own butter that's vegan and everything else. But maybe the thing that people actually responded to the most was the way that your home was organized and the decor and the way that you made these flower arrangements. And maybe you start to understand that like, wow, I didn't even notice that I'm so good at that. But maybe only because I had people over and I sort of set up this party, I realized that I'm just really good at like making, you know, things look beautiful. And so maybe then the next thing you try is like you take that feedback and you do a floral arranging class, or you decide that you're going to go into business like making these mason jars that are like decorated in a certain way because that's what you had on the table and everybody loved it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
You know, you made a really good point because first of all,
thank you.
I make a horrible motivational speaker. You know, and
okay.
People ask me sometimes like, you know, where do you get the confidence to do all these different things? And I'm like, well, I don't know about confidence, but like where I get it, like I can't really say that. But, you know, where confidence comes from, in my opinion, because I think I know what they're asking, is you do things. And as you get right. better at those things, mm-hmm. you become more confident in those things. So when you ask me how I can become confident to do different things, I've done enough and I've got decent at enough things that I know, look, you throw something else on my plate, I'll figure it out. That's the whole confidence thing. Now,
yep,
you brought
right.
a great different angle to this, which I might follow up with when I speak to people again. So then once you tackle this new thing, maybe that new thing is not what you should be tackling in the first place. So after you tackle this thing for a while, you will start seeing a bigger picture and you will realize which part of it you should be tackling. But that also comes from doing it in the first place. You might not that's get it in the beginning.
That's correct. That's exactly it. And that's why I really encourage people to stop thinking about it. Like, how many times in your life have you met people who are like, so I don't know, but I've been thinking for a while about starting a blog. I've been thinking for a while about starting this business. It's like, stop thinking about it. You're not going to get anywhere from that. What you're going to get the most value out of is putting up the blog several times and then noticing what's happening. What part of it do you like? What part of it do people respond to? Where can you double down and triple down on your strengths? And you can't get that from your mind. It's like if you wanted to go hiking and you have no idea where, you know, where the mountain exactly turns and you get that amazing view, you can't understand it from sitting on that first step before you actually, you know, tie your shoe and get up on that mountain. Like, you've got to go in order to, like, see around the corner and then finally see that view. You can't see it from here. We don't necessarily ever get to know what the next 28 steps look like. And so usually it's just about having the courage and, like, putting your shoes on and, like, start walking up the mountain. And eventually, like, you'll go, oh, there it is. I see it now. But you got to get some perspective. You got to get up a little higher. And you can't get there from just thinking your way there. So what you're saying is right. We've got to do and do, and then we've got to assess, and then we've got to assess. And what most people do is they do very little. And then if they've done even a little, they don't do the assessing part. So they usually give up instead of saying, well, how can I assess what's working and what's not working and then make what's working better?
So what do you tell them then?
Which part?
When they don't know how to assess what they're doing. So a lot of people will just start doing something and they mm-hmm. will go through the motions without thinking. So what would right. you tell someone like that?
I would say, look, like, you have a choice to make. You know, it's all decisions. Like, if you don't really care about doing this thing, like, if you don't really want to be a playwright or you don't really want to be a dancer or you don't really want to be doing any of these things, then do whatever you want. But if you really want this and you know why you really want it, why do you really want it? Like, what's the why? Is it just because you want your dad to be proud of you? Then of course you're going to give up. It's not a strong enough reason. If you really want to do this because it makes you feel fulfilled and happy, and you sense that by you being the happiest version of you, that's going to give other people permission to be the happiest version of them, and you feel like by you being fulfilled, maybe doing this thing will actually serve the world. Like, maybe you think that, like, you do make amazing cookies and it's a really honest transaction to, like, make a great cookie and hand it to somebody and they go, wow, that just made me smile. That was an amazing cookie. So you have this need to start a bakery because it makes you feel like it's a way to take care of other people. And a lot of people feel that way about making food, that it's a way for people to nurture other people. So if that's your why, then why would you give up? And why would you not assess? Because everybody is broken, and everybody who you look at, who you compare yourself to, who's successful, they've been doing years of that assessing. That is what it takes. So it doesn't mean that you're a failure because you now have to assess something or it didn't work right out the gate. Listen to my story. I'm just one person, but I told you, like, I got a record deal, which was incredibly hard to do. And then I got dropped, like, no, don't need you. So I had to go back to the drawing board and figure out something else. And had the licensing thing not worked out, I would have had to go back to the drawing board and figure out something else. And I just feel like people have, they have this illusion that they're very, like, small. You know, like, we have this illusion. So when we get this rejection, we take it like, oh God, it's like, you're so much bigger than this play that you wrote that not everybody liked. Who cares if not everybody likes the cookies? Who cares if you get dropped from a label? That's not you. Are you? I mean, Freud talks about, like, the id, the ego, the superego. Like, there's many dimensions to who we are. And I do a lot of meditation. And when you meditate, you come to terms with the part of you that notices all your thoughts, that's aware of all the thoughts, that's not living the thoughts. Which, when I'm saying that, what I mean is, we're so much bigger than, like, this little ego. Like, you know, I'm 38, I'm 5'8", I live in this zip code, I have this car, I don't have that car, I don't have this house, I have that house. Like, whatever the heck all that stuff is, none of it matters. So because we're so much bigger than all that, we're like these amazing, huge, like, balls of energy, you know, like, we're so multifaceted. When you look at yourself like that, you can take the input, you can take the feedback, you can take the rejection, and you can just use it to get closer and see it as, like you said to me, getting dropped was the best thing that ever happened to me in many ways, because I wasn't supposed to be there. And so when I get a no, instead of complaining and licking my wounds, I'm just like, oh, good. That shows me that that door is not my door. I'm going to go down a different door. You know, I'm going to open a different door, go down a different road. So you got to do it. It's what has to be done. So you got to make a decision, like, do you really want it or not? And the people who really want it, they've done all these studies on it. Angela Duckworth has an amazing book called Grit. And she said it's all these studies. She did a TED Talk on it. She said it's not IQ. It's not your zip code. It's not how much money your parents made. It's how much perseverance you have in the tank. That's it. And that's something you have control over. You don't have control over, you know, where you were born or like what your story was when you grew up or what zip code you were born in. Okay, that stuff is all circumstance. That all happened. But you have control over how much perseverance you're going to have about something. You just got to make a decision.
Yeah, I think a factor that plays into it is fear too. You know, fear of what people will think if you put yourself out there. And I've spoke with a couple friends that didn't start podcasts or didn't start doing things because they're like, well, we have nothing to talk about. What if the people don't like us? I'm like, look, even my podcast, you know, it's not the best podcast. It's decent. If I make a mistake, I always think, you know, 70 or 80% of the people listening are probably zoned out anyways. They'll come back in if, you know, for like a second or two. The other 15% are listening, but they only think about how it's going to impact them or themselves anyways. And maybe 1% at the most will notice the mistake. And even 1% of that maybe actually emails me and says, hey, you messed up there. But that never happens. Like, who cares? You know? So I think it's not a fear that it should be, I don't know, taken too strongly or you know, you don't do something because you think people reject you. I mean, I was in sales for a long time and I just thought it was a numbers game. You go to 100 people, you sell anything, 1% will say yes, even if they think you're just a super shitty salesperson. Maybe they just feel bad for you, you know, and it's, I think it's the same here. But I do think people see the success. Like if someone just looks at your website, they see so much success, they're like, oh man, I can't get there. They think it's an overnight thing.
Right. Yeah, it's not overnight for anybody.
Yeah, but I think that's what stops a lot of people too, because we always show success stories. You know, we barely ever show failing, but then when we do show failing, people make it seem amazing. Like, God, that's such a great thing that you failed. I mean, it's okay, it's a failure. You know, it's not a great thing. It happens to us, but it's not something that's great. You know, I don't like when there were even conferences for a while about failing. Like people like came up there and just gave their biggest failures and other people cheered. I'm like, what the hell are you guys cheering for? You know, I mean, it's good to hear about it and learn. But I mean, this is nothing to celebrate.
Well, I mean, what's nice about it is it's taking the shame away, you know, because if we need to be willing to get past the failure in order to keep going. And so it's not something that people want to talk about on their Facebook page. They don't even want to tell you if they had a fight with their husband. They see shame around that. So in a way, it's great to celebrate failure because you get to see that, you know, so what? Keep going.
Yeah, so see, that's the part I like, though. As long as you just say, yes, so what? Keep going. But I think they just focus on the failure too much. And I thought that's what confused me a little bit. Like, I get the whole thing. Like, I fail so much. And I tell people, I'm like, look, I failed again and again, but I'm still doing it, right?
That's right. That's what it takes.
But the focus on the failure, I don't focus on it. I mean, I see like, okay, I failed. Can I learn anything from it? Sometimes I can't because it happened, you know, just circumstances, like bad luck. You know, someone else did the same thing and it happened for them. Especially, you know, when it comes to crypto and investing, I mean, all it takes is 2 minutes difference. We could be doing the same thing and I just made money and you lost money, you know, but it's
totally.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I feel about that.
But what I will say, is that people do compare their behind the scenes mess to the success highlight reels of all these famous people who are ahead of you. Everybody is a mess. Like even people when they get to the next level, like even, you know, in my own life, I mean, somebody asked me the other day, she's like, how are you doing? We just bought this beautiful, like $3.5 million house and it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's great. And I am enjoying it. And I am enjoying that my work is thriving. And I still have so many of my own demons. I have so many things I want to work on. I have a fight with my husband every other 4 days and then 3 days we're fine. 1 day we're fighting. I'm trying to be a better parent. I'm trying to juggle that. I'm trying to juggle feeling guilty for working so much and not being as much available for my kids. I want to have more balance. I want my business to grow even more. Once you have a certain level of business, now you take on more debt because you level up, you know, you live in a nicer home, whatever, and then your business needs to grow even more. So everyone's a work in progress, and don't think for a second that anyone has it together just because their Instagram looks perfect. It's all a lie. Everyone's broken. We're all working on it. And to think that anybody got there because they were perfect to begin with is the biggest false thing you could ever think, you know? So you're fine and you're closer than you think. You're so much closer than you think. Like, one thing I like to tell people, I started my podcast January of 2017. Okay. So that's a year and like 3 or 4 months ago. And this January of 2018, we were the number one pick by Apple. They featured us in the new year and they were like, best shows for 2018. Number one, Kathy Heller's podcast, Don't Keep Your Day Job. Number two, Oprah, Super Soul Sunday. And then it was like Tim Ferriss was number five. Incredible. Is that crazy? I mean, what I'm telling you is this. That is a sign that what I'm saying is true. There is room for anyone. If you have the heart and the gusto and you're willing to try and then try again and then assess and keep going, you're going to find your tribe. There's enough room for you. No one cares if you have a famous last name. No one cares if you're perfect. What people care about is that you did the work and you found where you're supposed to be. And so that sometimes does take trial and effort. And you know, it's been nonstop in my life, having the courage to put myself in positions of doing things that are uncomfortable and doing a whole lot and then seeing where that goes. And it's nonstop and I'm always working harder at it. And there's a lot of reward for it. So I encourage other people to do the same thing, because I don't think that it's only the thing that happens to me. I think that good stuff happens to everyone when we put ourselves out there and we keep trying stuff and really trying to like hone our craft and get that feedback like we talked about before and assessing stuff. You're closer than you think, really.
What are some books that you recommend to people?
Some books. I love Chris Guillebeau. I've had him on my podcast and he has a great book, 27 Days from Idea to Income. Like his, he has a podcast called Side Hustle. So I like his book. You Are a Badass by Jen Shinchero. That's a good book. I also do a lot of mindfulness work on my own. So I love Jon Kabat-Zinn and I've read a lot of his books. There's so much great stuff and you will be led to what you seek, you know? So I would say, you know, start with one thing and then see how much energy you get from just listening to that person's podcast and then see if that leads you to, oh, and they had this guest on and that guest wrote a book and I'm going to check that out. And now you're like, you know, off to the races and you're finding lots of stuff that inspires you. But we've got to make our inspiration sort of a must. We have to keep ourselves inspired. It's like putting gas in a tank. Like you can't do any of the things we talked about unless you feel inspired. So we've got to figure out what's going to inspire you and make sure you fill yourself up with that every single day, like a job.
Love it. Kathy, where can people find you?
People can find me at my podcast, which is called Don't Keep Your Day Job. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's also on SoundCloud. They can also find me on Instagram at Kathy.Heller, CATHY.HELLER. And if they're a songwriter, they can find me at Catch the Moon Music, which has a Facebook page. That's our licensing agency. They can feel free to like, oh, I want you to hear my songs. And you can write to the team at hello@catchthemoonmusic.com. There's so many different ways to find me, but I do check all my DM messages on Instagram. And I'm here to support and cheer for everybody. I really am.
Awesome. Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.